We're trying to conduct a serious scientific investigation.
Science, logic, reason.
Do you have any hard data?
Now, that's what I call science. You're listening to That's What I Call Science, the weekly radio show and podcast that brings you independent and interesting science, technology, engineering, and maths content from Tasmania. We're bringing you big ideas from the small island. The show is proudly supported by Edge Radio, Hobart's premium youth station. So head to edgeradio.org.au for more information about what they're up to. My name is Dr. Neve Chapman, and as many of you would be aware, I am the weekly host of our show. That's What I Call Science. I'd like to begin today's episode by acknowledging the traditional owners of the land on which we are recording. So for me, I'm on Lutruwita in Tasmania, and I'd like to acknowledge the Palawa people. But I'd also like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land where you are listening. On behalf of everyone, I pay my respects to elders past and present. So listeners, I'd say it's probably fair that in modern society, most of us own a smartphone. But I often find myself thinking back to the first phone that I had and then being amazed by how powerful the small little computer in my hand is today by comparison. And I think when I first had my phone, I was amazed when it could just call somebody without having to be plugged into the landline. And then I was amazed that we could, you know, send these really awful sounding ringtones to each other via Bluetooth. And I just don't think I could have envisaged all of the future uses that would be possible through a phone. But our expert guest today is going to be telling us about how we can push the boundaries even further on smartphone technology. For example, have you ever wondered about whether or not your phone could test how safe your food is before you eat it? You know, there were people who were paid to do that before very important people at one stage. So the thought that a phone could do that now could, you know, save many a life maybe. But for many of us, eating out safely might include reading some reviews or even checking the food safety rating. But for those with allergies that are potentially life-threatening, food safety is of paramount importance, and being able to test something effectively on the fly when you're out and about would be a really powerful game changer and might open up a world of possibilities. So today, our expert guest, Dr. Jordi Niels from CSIRO, is telling us a little bit about smartphone technology to detect allergies in food. Hi, Jordi.
Hello.
Could you start by telling me what an allergen is and how it's usually detected, or how we would go about detecting something like that in a mobile device?
Okay, so an allergen can be lots of different things, but food allergies are often protein-based allergies. So it's a type of protein that your body reacts very heavily to, and you get an immune reaction and you can get anaphylactic shock, for example. That would be the worst thing that can happen. Or you can get a swollen tongue, tintling feeling in the lips. And the types of allergies that there are really vast, but the big ones are basically the peanuts, tree nuts, milk, soya, and shellfish and fish. Those are with the big allergies that there are. And at the moment, we're trying to detect with a lab-based technology that is called ELISA. So basically what you have is you use antibodies that are natural molecules that have a kind of lock and key principle that can detect proteins. And so you label those antibodies with a kind of tag that can give a chemical reaction and create a color. And then in the lab with 96 well plates and a quite complicated procedure of different immobilization steps and reactions, immunoreactions between the antibody and the target, you can finally get this kind of color reaction that you can measure, and that you can use to kind of quantify the amount of allergens in the food. Now, a test like that takes generally about a day and requires expert laboratory knowledge to do. And one of the problems with these tests is that they are still, unfortunately, not very exact. Because the problem is that these antibodies, they detect certain areas of the protein, but in a three-dimensional conformation. So you must imagine a protein is a very complex mixture of different amino acids that forms a kind of ball structure. And it is the surface of that ball that is being detected by the antibodies. But if you have those proteins and you process them by cooking, for example, you can change the three-dimensional structure of the protein. What can also happen is they can get cleaved by fermentation, so break into smaller balls. And if this happens, then the antibodies, they often cannot anymore recognize that specific area on the ball that they would normally recognize. So they lose detection. And you, in your test, you get the idea that there are no allergens present, while in fact there is still allergen present. And what we are trying to develop is a new method, basically combining a more sophisticated laboratory-based technique to do better quantification in the lab, and then use the information we get from that to develop better antibodies. And then the final step is to then use those optimized antibodies in an assay with your smartphone, where you can actually detect within a matter of a few minutes the allergens in your food.
So the idea would be that you're trying to take like a validated lab-based method and then make that more mobile so that it can be done with less sophisticated tools that people have at their disposal. But it does sound like, so to detect an allergen or like anything that has this lock and key type receptor on the outside of whatever the molecule is, you need to give it something that essentially is the key to its lock. So in this model, you'd be saying that people who are interested in checking for allergens would still bring some antigen out with them so that they could, you know, take a little bit of their food and then test it separately. Is that correct?
That's pretty correct. I mean, the thing is that in one way, in the lab, we are going to another technology, which is a mass spectrometry technology, which is actually much more sophisticated than the technology that is currently being used. And then what we're going to do with that system is we're going to break up the protein into lots of small pieces by digestion and then measure those pieces. We can do that then for all different types of foods that are processed. And in that way, you can find which pieces of the protein don't change. So which of them don't get disappeared, don't get degraded when you are cooking your food. And so then we have actually, you catch two birds with one stone with this system, because first of all, we're developing a system that's much more quantitative in the lab, and we identify which pieces we can develop the antibodies against. And then when we have that information, we'll develop antibodies against that, and we'll make a kind of system that is like a small 3D printed cartridge that you can connect to your smartphone. And then all you have to do is add the food to it and turn, let the food go through different compartments that are already with all the analytes inside. And you just have to make an image with your phone. And then the software on your phone will quantify the image, the color in the image, and tell you if there is an allergen inside.
So it sounds like the way that this technology would work is that there would be still a certain amount of processing that would need to happen that the user would do first.
Yeah, that's pretty much correct. Only for the smartphone, the final idea of this project is to get a smartphone that the user really doesn't have to add anything.
Yeah.
So everything is already integrated into a 3D printed device. And all you have to do is just take a bit of your food and add it into one compartment of the device. And that's it. The rest would be pretty much automated.
So what parts of smartphone technology lend themselves to this kind of adaptation? Because, I mean, for someone like me, it seems like quite a far stretch to go from doing something like this in the lab under really controlled conditions where someone's like a trained technician or like a highly skilled scientist, to take that and then like democratize that technology in a way to something that's handheld and portable and that, you know, almost everyone in the world has access to. What is the rationale for doing that? Like, what parts of smartphone technology actually assist that?
The big rationale behind it is just that the smartphone is basically a mini computer. So it has already all the processing power that you need to run any algorithms on it. And you can create software that can be automated to do automated analysis. And then you can use one of the sensors of the smartphone. The technology that we're working at the moment would just use the camera to make images. Need an add-on device that you need to click into the smartphone. And in that add-on device, there will be all the things that you would normally have in the laboratory. So all the reagents and the antibody be already in the add-on device. But because they are already dosed and it's just optimized everything already, All you have to do is just make an image, and then the software on the phone will process that image and will integrate the color over a calibration curve that is in software to quantify. The thing is that the lab-based technology in the end is the same, only bigger, because you are working with a 96 well plate, right, in the lab. So here you would have just one well because you are testing only one sample, not 96. And then in the lab, you would have a very advanced big benchtop spectrometer that would take your images. But the thing is that smartphone cameras nowadays, they are so sensitive, they can compete with this type of benchtop spectrometers. So that's why you can get almost the same quality and sensitivity with a smartphone camera.
So spectrometers are usually, am I right in thinking that they are like a library of all these different proteins, but that each thing has a different color? So then if your phone takes the picture, like, is it a certain color that indicates then the presence of a certain protein?
Exactly. The label that we would be using would be a fluorescent label, a bioluminescent label, actually.
That's like a sign to like this protein is the color fluorescent pink, for example. Like
yeah,
to really
let's say fluorescent.
Yeah.
Let's go for fluorescent pink. So what you would do is you would basically have like one part of that protein on a chip, and another part, well, on a chip on the allergen that you immobilized on the chip, and another part of that protein would be on the antibody. And once those two pieces of protein meet, they give a fluorescent signal. Let's say fluorescent pink. So you could just take an image of that and quantify the amount of pink that you have in the image.
So I'm starting to get a picture in my head of like what this would look like if I was someone with, let's say, a severe nut allergy, and I knew that I wanted to check for the presence of nuts in my food. Then I would have like a little insert for my phone. But would I need to like, so the major question that comes to mind is, one, how do I clean it so it doesn't get yucky? And then two, do I need to replace like consumables inside it that like help run the analytics part? Like usually you've got to have like different presence of different things. You can tell I haven't been in a lab in a while, hey. But like, so would I need to like keep buying more consumables, or would my like one product that plugs in kind of like do me for the use that I'm going to have?
Yeah,
like
it would
lifetime?
Be a kind of cartridge throwaway system. You'd have the main 3D printed attachment that you would clip your phone onto to hold your phone in the same position and to be sure that the distance is correct so that there's no variance when you're taking an image. And then you'd have a cartridge where you put your food in, the little bit of food that you want to test. When you're done with the test, you just click out the cartridge and throw it away. So you don't need to clean anything or restock consumables. You just need to have cartridges to do the test.
This sounds to me a little bit like a glucometer. Like I'm sure lots of people might have seen, you know, the pinprick blood sample testing that people do for their blood sugar. And it's kind of like the same principle that you put a drop of blood onto like a little test strip. And then that test strip goes into a machine. And usually I believe they're using light sensors to determine whether or not there's sufficient amounts of glucose in the blood. So they're kind of similar thing that in that concept of that you've got like a little strip that you use, it's quite small and portable.
Yeah, it's very similar. The glucometer is most of the time electrochemical. So you're actually taking an electrochemical measurement, and this is a colorimetric measurement with a camera.
Yeah.
But the idea stays very similar. It was a great success story for biosensors because there is an enzyme that is a glucose oxidase that is an extremely stable enzyme that you can use to detect the presence of glucose. And because it is so stable and actually so sensitive and accurate, it's very easy to detect that molecule. But unfortunately, not all molecules are the same. So there are lots of things that are much more challenging, such as allergens, for example, where you don't have this type of simple enzymatic detection that you can use. But with this type of biosensors that we are working on, and that lots of other research groups are working on, we hope to be able to bring that really in the hands of the consumer in the following year.
Awesome. Well, you're listening to That's What I Call Science. My name's Dr. Neve Chapman, and I'm joined with Dr. Jordi Nellis, and we're talking about allergen detection using smartphone devices. And stay with us for just a moment. We're going to be talking more about the challenges of making this big technology into something that's handheld, portable, and accessible to all. We're listening to That's What I Call Science, and we're talking about the use of smartphones to detect allergens in foods. My name is Dr. Neve Chapman, and I'm joined by our expert guest, Jordi Nellis from CSIRO. So we've been talking a lot about the kinds of technology that are currently used to detect allergens, and we're talking about ELISA and mass spectrometry. And something that instantly came to mind, Jordi, was, I'm not sure if you've read the book, but there was a book a few years ago about a company called Theranos, where a woman in Silicon Valley tried to take blood testing, but like all of the pathology blood testing, and make it suitable on small scale, could be done anywhere in the world, to be done by a smartphone, by just a fingerprint blood sample. But it turned out all the results were fabricated and stuff, and it was just way too hard. And
I am familiar with the story.
Yeah, I think lots of people are, which is a shame, but it's also a good lesson in like why it's important to have lots of scrutiny and peer review and integrity in science. And I read a couple of your papers before our interview today, and it seems like you've already tested the techniques that are available technology-wise for how they can identify the presence of different small molecules as part of like a bigger piece of something, which is really important to bear in mind, because to me, it seems like the problem that you would face here is that if you want to do this out in the real world, you're not going to be having a purified sample of something. Like, you know, if I have to keep with the nut allergy comparison, if I have a nut allergy and I see a peanut, I don't need you to tell me if that has nuts in it. Like, I know that it does, but it's when it's mixed in with everything else and it's really hard to tell. But then it's been really heavily processed, and it's quite maybe hard to determine the way that that protein looks because of the way it's been handled. So what are some of the challenges that you've encountered with using this technology and trying to take it from the lab into something that is available everywhere in smartphone technology?
I think one of the biggest challenges is the difference between the telephones. This is a really big, big challenge that we have to overcome as a first. The issue is that each brand of phone has a unique camera, each model, let's say, that will take a picture and have a different amount of color intensity for a certain color as another brand of phone. This poses a challenge. I mean, it may not look like it when you look at the pictures of different phones from one object. It might look similar, but if you go really into the detail, there is a difference in the white balance. There's a difference in the shutter time. There's a difference in the image processing that is behind the image. So for example, iPhones, they do a lot of image processing that kind of changes the color intensities and the white balance that you have in the image. And this is a big challenge to overcome, because if you want to have one calibration curve that you're going to use to interpolate all your values on, and you have different color intensities just because of the cameras, you need to have a way to correct that. So we are working on that using machine learning algorithms, and we are also working on that using a kind of camera calibration techniques, but it remains a challenge. And another challenge is definitely the matrix, the food matrix. So the first thing is indeed you had that spot on, is the processing of the food, right? If food is boiled, or if food is put in the microwave, or it has been fermented, the structure of the proteins might change. And we are trying to detect protein by using a three-dimensional detection technique. So we have to be absolutely sure that what we are trying to detect is still present after all these processing techniques. So that's why we're using mass spectrometry in the lab to try and determine which areas of the protein that we're interested in remain stable after food processing. So once we have those three-dimensional areas that are like the really stubborn and stable pieces of the protein that don't change no matter what you do to it, then we can make antibodies specifically against that area. And a final challenge, I think, the homogeneity, how equally the food is distributed within. So if you have, for example, a cookie that contains nuts, and you break off the wrong piece of the cookie that doesn't have any nut in it, and then you use that to detect, you will, of course, get no nuts detected. However, there might be many nuts in the cookie. So this is a problem that I think science cannot overcome. But that just has to be common sense and very well communicated to any user, that you need to be aware that you make sure that you have a well-mixed mixture of what you're eating.
Would there be, like, even if you couldn't make it, though, as small as a smartphone handheld device, would there be a market for something like this that's commercial?
I think one of the great markets that we can imagine is in food processing plants, actually. Because one of the big issues at the moment is that if you have a food processing plant and you produce something that has milk inside or that has peanuts inside, you cannot use that food processing line anymore to make anything that would be milk.
Yeah, that's nut or lactose free. Yeah, and I suppose though the smartphone angle gives it directly to the consumer, who's kind of then empowered to manage their own needs, I suppose.
Yeah, the smartphone angle would be the ultimate device that would really democratize food safety, basically.
At what amount would be meaningful to detect an allergen or, you know, another pathogen or just some sort of molecule that may be linked to food safety?
Yeah, that is highly dependent on the type of molecule that you're detecting. So if we are talking, for example, about peanuts, you need about 10 parts per million. There's still a debate about the exact concentration that would be safe. It's also highly dependent on the person, because for somebody, 100 ppm, 100 parts per million or 1,000 parts per million would still be okay. But for somebody else, 5 parts per million might already be a problem. But then it depends. Like, if you want to, for example, detect toxins, there are some marine toxins that can be in shellfish. There you need parts per billion. So you need to be even more sensitive there.
Yeah, that's interesting. And so when you do these tests, do you set it as like a simple yes, no presence kind of response? Or do they actually have the sophistication to tell you how much is in there of something?
At the moment, for the consumer, I think we'll be aiming at a yes or no answer. Mm-hmm. So we will just set a safe level based on studies that have been done.
Okay, you've been listening to That's What I Call Science. My name is Neve Chapman and I'm joined by my expert guest, Jordi, and we've been talking about smartphones to detect allergens. Stick with us, and in just a moment, we'll be talking about how this technology could be used in the future. You're listening to That's What I Call Science, and we've been talking about how we could potentially improve smartphone technology to identify allergens or other harmful material in food to improve food safety. My name's Neve Chapman, and I've been joined with Jordi Nelis from CSIRO. And I've been really keen when we've been talking about this new technology and what it would take to have it adopted into a smartphone-based tech solution. What's been going on in my mind is, well, how do you regulate the use of something like that and make it safe? Once you put technology into the hands of the masses, it becomes quite hard to control or to govern safely. So what kind of regulations do you think would be needed to empower consumers to use something like this?
I think in the app, so the whole idea would be to do this kind of analysis with the app. So you have to download the app and then you have to follow the instructions on the app to operate the device, and the app will then give you a result. And I think that in that app, you need to provide people with the information about how these tests work. Not too much in detail, but especially that this type of tests inherently are not always correct. So you will, of course, get, let's say, a 2, 3, or maybe 5% chance that the test will say that there is an allergen present while there is no allergen present. This is something that's inherent with this type of analytical test, because you want to be absolutely sure that if there is an allergen present, it is detected. The worst would be if the test would say that there is an allergen, that an allergen is not present while in fact it is present. So we want to avoid that. And to avoid that, we make sure that we won't get this kind of false negatives by being very, very tolerant to variation in the downline of that section. That means that you will always get some false positives.
So do you think that this type of technology then would be really precise at detecting like one thing rather than having an overall food safety thing that can detect lots of things that could be wrong with food?
Yeah, I think we will see lots of different types of these sensors coming onto the market, but for individual or few compounds. So I'm at the moment working in allergens, but I think we will also see them for some toxins like mycotoxins, for example, that can be present in grains and in nuts. We may also see them appear for some pathogens like E. coli or norovirus. On all of these sections, I know that there are people are working on developing this type of smartphone-based technology.
Do you think we're at a pace of momentum now with smartphone technology that it's kind of just a matter of time before the technology is implemented? Because it sounds like, you know, this is pretty cutting edge, but it does seem to me like there's a lot of different applications happening with smartphone technology, and that very soon we're going to see a big acceleration in what our phones can do again, a bit like we did when cameras first started to be introduced to phones.
There are already several of these devices on the market, not so many for consumers. I know about two different systems that are on the market for consumers with smartphones. So one is for some allergen, and another one is for pesticide detection and heavy metal detection. And then there are several devices on the market more for farmers to, for example, detect antibiotics in milk with a smartphone, and also some smartphone-based systems to quantify mycotoxins in grains, also sold to huge farmers and huge producers that test for these things. So it is coming.
That's great. Thanks so much, Jordi. So you've been listening to That's What I Call Science, and we've had a really fascinating conversation about how we might be able to detect food allergens in using our smartphones in the near future. Thanks for listening. I really hope you enjoyed the show. And if you did, please get in touch with us across social media. And this was a Pint of Science special. So do get around Pint of Science Australia.
This program was made possible with support from the Community Broadcasting Foundation. Find out more at cbf.org.au. You've been listening to That's What I Call Science, brought to your station and across the nation via the Community Radio Network. You can find That's What I Call Science on all major podcast streaming services and social media platforms. Like and subscribe for on-demand science updates from the team. That's What I Call Science is proudly recorded in Tasmania at Edge Radio. Head to edgeradio.org.au for more information on how you can support Community Radio. GemMaker are a proud sponsor of That's What I Call Science. GemMaker provide expert advice, services and training to commercialise new knowledge and technologies. Go to gemmaker.com.au for more information.